thank you, Greg, and thanks everybody for coming to lunch today. It really is a great opportunity for me to talk about the importance of the desal plant and the rationale behind it. We do have some detractors in the community, and possibly not in this room, but it's important for us to get the message out about why we're doing these things. I'm just going to start off with a little bit of the rationale about why we're doing it, and I'm afraid that that involves talking about rainfall for a little bit. In around 2003-04, it became apparent that Sydney didn't have enough water, and in fact, it was estimated at the time that we had a shortfall of about 40-50% of our supply. So we nearly needed to double what was sitting there at that moment. That's about 250 gigalitres or 300 gigalitres or so, which was about half of what Sydney was using at that time. Now that's very sobering when you've got a city the size of Sydney and over time you've got yourself to a point where you really need to either decrease your demand or increase your supply by such a large amount. The short-term response was water restrictions, which we've all been living with for some time, and a cutback in environmental flows into our river systems, not so noticeable by the population, but very important in saving water. But as I stressed, a short-term response. And these actions reduced the rate that water storages were being depleted. Sydney Water ramped up its demand management program, which had been tacking along at a very low level, and we also greatly increased our efforts on reducing our own leaks. But let me talk about dams and rainfall patterns for a little while, and my thanks to the Sydney Catchment Authority for much of the data that follows in the next chart. This chart is a cumulative chart of rainfall, and the little red line at the top is from a place called Urandri, which is in the Warragamba catchment and which is one of the rainfall monitoring stations. And the blue line is at Observatory Hill. And what you can see from this is that those of you who think it's raining a lot, yes, that's true, it is on the coast, but in the catchment there's often not a lot happening. Sorry, I had that round the wrong way. Sydney's red and Urandri's blue. So over time, you know, you really start getting very large differences. The Sydney Water Board gets a chart of the rainfall every month, and often where our catchments are, it's deep red. This is an average annual rainfall chart from January 03 to July 08. And you can see all those nice blue bits along the coast is where it's been raining, a little bit where it was yellow, and in all the sort of brown, orange and red, nothing. And those sort of black pieces hanging around out there are dams. And the biggest one is Warragamba. And you can see from that chart that about the only rain that's happened into Warragamba has happened down the arm of the Cox River at the foot of Katoomba. And even then, not very much. This is a graph of what the dam storages are with and without Shoalhaven transfers. And the Shoalhaven transfers really started at around 2002. And you can see that the addition of those, which is the green line, have really added an enormous amount to our water supply. Now, had we not had Shoalhaven transfers, we would have had the dam storages down to about 15% in June 2007, which was when we decided to build the desal plant. And in fact, the dam storages at that time were just short of 34%. At the moment, our dam storages are just over 65%. But you can see without Shoalhaven, we'd be running at about 35%. Now, there's nothing wrong with Shoalhaven water, of course, but what this shows you is that we are heavily reliant on one dam, the Tallawa Dam, on the Shoalhaven River. The other point about Shoalhaven transfers is to be a long-term viable measure, we really need to put in additional pipes. We've been moving that water down the Windjarra and Wallandilly rivers, and those rivers are rivers that usually operate with intermittent rainfall, and it rains sometimes and doesn't rain for a while, so they're generally low flow and then high flow types of river systems. And ever since we started moving huge amounts of water down them, they've had continuous flow with environmental consequences. This is a chart that will be familiar to many of you who know about Metropolitan Water Plan. The rather busy chart, but the lines at the top are rainfall and they translate into runoff into rivers now and runoff into dams. The thing that's really different about Sydney's water system compared to everywhere else is the volatility of our runoff. You can see there that in the first 48 years or so of the last century, we had quite low runoffs into the dam storages. Then we had about 50 years of quite good runoff, and we're now back into a very low runoff situation, or so it appears. Since the 1990s, we've been travelling at an average annual rate of about 633 gigalitres a year, and that's not much more than Sydney uses each year. So we really haven't been adding to our dams, unless you add the Shoalhaven water on, which are in the little blocks at the top in the middle of that diagram, and which you just saw a while ago. The thing about this volatility is that because of it, our forefathers built a dam system that has an enormous amount of storage. Sydney has storage that will last for about 5 years, and that's really unusual. Most cities have storage that lasts considerably less. Tokyo and London, for example, have storages that last for 6 and 10 weeks. And we have storages for 5 years, and the reason for that is that you get a dam fill and then you don't get rain for literally decades at that same level. This is just a graph of what the dam levels have been at the Catchment Authority, and you can see that in January 2002 we were just over 80%, which is a very nice place to be, and we haven't been anywhere near it since. Water restrictions were introduced at varying levels of severity, and then in about the middle of 2006 the Catchment Authority put its pipes in the dams down deeper so they could get more water, and that gave us a bit of extra storage that we could access, and then we started the Green Line, so we really improved with that important measure, and as you can see from that, in the middle of 07 we did get a bit of rain, and we've been sort of tacking along fairly level ever since then. So that's sort of where we're at, and I now just want to turn on to the solutions that were adopted and how we're going with those. The government and Sydney Water and the Catchment Authority got together and do so frequently, but in 2004, along with an independent panel of experts, it was recognised, as I mentioned, that Sydney was really very short of water. And it was decided that there wasn't just one option to fix this problem up, there were basically three. One was water saving, one was recycling, and the other was additional supply. I'll just quickly go through how we're tracking on water savings and recycling without labouring the point. But I do want to make the point that this is a sort of multi-soluble problem. It's not just being solved by desalination, but by a large number of things. This is a graph of Sydney's water use against population growth, and you can see that we are now in this city using about the same amount of water that we used in 1970. And that is not just because of restrictions. It is largely because of programs like WaterFix. Everybody's now got drill flush toilets, water efficient showerheads, aerated taps, rain tanks in their gardens, and so forth. Business has been at least as proactive on this, and you'll find that all big buildings in this city now have very efficient water cooling towers. It's very unusual to find leaking systems. People are just extremely conscious of water use. And it does strike you when you travel, if you find yourself in a city where there isn't fuel flush toilets, the shower practically kills you with the force of the water that comes out of it. This has just been a no-no in Australian cities generally for some time, and it really has made a difference in Sydney, as you can see. And we expect that even when restrictions are lifted, and remember they're short-term measures, we will keep our water use probably 9% below what it otherwise would have been through those water efficiency measures, more efficient washing machines and the like. With recycling, Sydney for some time has had relatively small recycled water projects, mainly not terribly highly treated effluent being used on golf courses and sporting fields. But in the early 2000s, the Rouse Hill scheme started. That's a very large recycled water scheme with dual reticulation pipes for a residential development in the northwest. And as the northwest develops, the recycled water in that area is rolling out. Because of basics, developers find it more cost-effective to use dual reticulation recycled water than rainwater tanks to meet their basics targets, so long as they've got over a certain number of lots that they're developing. So those sorts of schemes are occurring at Hoxton Park west of Liverpool and Ropes Crossing out near St Mary's, and they're just spreading across the city as development happens. The biggest industrial recycled water plant is in place at Wollongong Sewage Treatment Plant, and that provides recycled water to BlueScope Steel. I actually think had that not been in place in the severe drought, we would have been in real trouble with water in Avon Dam that supplies the Illawarra. It got down into the low 20% at one stage, and just to put that in context, BlueScope Steel used 18% of the water supply in Wollongong. So we were sailing very close to the wind without then signing up for recycling and using it. We've got two big new plants under contract. At St Mary's, GE and a consortium are putting in a recycled water plant to treat effluent in the west. And that effluent will be treated effectively to drinking quality standards and returned to the Hawkesbury Nepean River. And that will stop Warragamba Dam needing to do environmental flows. So we're basically doing that to keep storage in the dam. At Rosehill Camellia, that's the private sector plant that Veolia and Alinta, in a consortium called Aquanet, are putting in place to provide industry around Smithfield and Camellia and Rosehill, and we signed that contract recently. So we're very confident that by 2015 we'll be recycling about 12% of the water supply. Now detail. Bob Evans will like these pictures. He's the plant manager out there, and these pictures were taken, some of them, last month. The desalination plant site is probably one of the largest infrastructure construction sites in New South Wales, if not Australia at the moment. It's about 700 people there every day, and you can see there's practically every crane in Sydney there. The plant is close to 30% built, and it is a hive of activity, and I don't go out there sort of between, I have months on end before I go out there, and then every time I go out there, there seems to be another building up. This is the reverse osmosis building. The way that desalination works is it's actually conceptually simple. Seawater gets pumped in to a reverse osmosis plant where at great pressure seawater is pushed through membranes and the salt molecules are taken out. You then have extraordinarily pure water, which is then treated so it's the same as the rest of the water in our system, and we transport it through to our system and put it in at Erskineville. In this building is where all the reverse osmosis membranes will sit, and it's well underway. This is a relatively old picture actually of a tunnel boring machine for the outlet tunnel. The seawater is being taken from the Tasman Sea about 400 metres off the coast. There's an inlet and an outlet tunnel, and these machines are like factories actually. They have 7 men in them every hour of the day. They are boring very large tunnels. The dirt and spoil come out on a conveyor belt underneath them. They've got kitchens and toilets inside them, and away they go and don't stop unless there's some particular need to do so. The outlet tunnel and the inlet tunnel both have their own boring machines, I think there's some sort of a contest going on about how fast you can get your tunnel boring machine to go, since that one's called Porsche. Just out in the Tasman Sea, we've recently had the jack-up barge installed, which has taken the fancy of the staff at Sydney Water because it's such a strange-looking thing. It is actually a barge. Divers have been down and put pads down for those four things, four jacks to go onto. What then happens is that from that barge in the centre drills down to meet the tunnels that the tunnel boring machines are going out with. And once that's done, they then have a very large sort of lid put on through which water will be diffused into the inlet tunnel, and at the outlet tunnel water will be diffused again later. This is the route of the pipeline that goes from Kurnell through to Erskineville. Sydney Water spent a lot of time on this trying to make sure we avoided as many people as possible. We're actually going down 3 residential streets on this route. One of them's at Kurnell, one's at Tancred Avenue just on the other side of the bay, and the other one's in Erskineville. So going down those streets, we're using smaller tunnel boring equipment so we don't have to trench down streets and stop people getting into their driveways and the like. It's about 14 kilometres, that pipeline, and it's also well under construction. That's part of the pipe being laid at Kurnell. It's 1.8 metres in diameter. We've sized the pipe for a plant that's twice the size of the one we're currently putting in. It will be very easy at that plant to add extra modules if we ever need it, and that's the reason why we're putting in the bigger pipe. And it goes back to dealing with uncertainty. We think we've got climate change in the catchment. We're not certain. It certainly looks like it, and just in case we're building a plant that you can add additional modules to in 10 years or so if you need to, at relatively low cost. And this is a shaft for that tunnel. That shaft at Canal Road at Botany will take a small tunnel boring machine that will go along and have pipes just in after it. So that's sort of all a happening thing as we speak. And I thought you would just like to see those pictures just to get a sense of this is a very happening thing, and this is where we're up to. I'll go back a bit. I might just dwell for a moment on objections to desal and what I think about those. The first objection, the objections basically come down to 3 things. 1, timing. 2, cost. And 3, environmental impact. On timing, there's a lot of people who wonder why we built this at Wendam for 34% instead of waiting until they got to 30. Now, the main answer to that is a risk management answer. When the dams were at 34%, storages were falling at 0.4% a week, and we had months of the summer left. There was a very real chance that at the rate of depletion we could get to dams that were 10% full, and that's really getting down to a very dangerous level. We estimated it would take us 26 months to complete the plant, and that was after we'd done all the advance work and the planning and things that indeed had been done ready to go. You only needed a delay in construction for any reason, including delays in getting membranes or any other kind of delay, and we could have had a situation where the city was facing really, really severe water shortages. That's a risk that can't be entertained for a major city, so that was the reason why 34% the button was pushed. And needless to say, some months after that it did rain, though again I stress not that much in the catchment. On the environmental front, the two concerns relate to the energy use of desalination plants and in particular greenhouse gas emissions. Now, it was emphasised from the start of this project that it would be powered by renewable energy, and we've recently contracted to have a wind-generated energy provided for the plant. A new 63-turbine wind farm at Bungendorf currently being built, just near Queanbeyan, and the energy produced there, which will exceed the needs of the desal plant, will go into the grid and Sydney Water will draw off what it needs at Kurnell. The creation of that new wind farm has increased the production of wind energy in New South Wales by 700%. So I think rather than contributing to the problem of climate change, we've actually, through this investment, got a long-term green energy supply that we otherwise wouldn't have had. That wind farm wouldn't be getting built if it didn't have our contract behind it. The remaining environmental concerns relate really to the plant's operation and come down to three questions. The first one is, what happens to the brine after you've made desalinated water? And the answer is, it goes back into the sea. For every 2 litres of water that we take into the plant, we release one back into the sea at double the salt concentration. What happens to that salt concentration is it goes out through diffusers on the sea floor, and modelling shows that that salt is back to normal levels within about 50 to 70 metres. The second question is a concern about fish, and indeed whales. Will fish be drawn into the inlet pipes? And the answer to that is no. They've been designed so that fish can actually swim into the pipes. They feel it getting a little bit more pressure than they're used to, and they swim back out again. And we have countless videos of fish swimming in and out of inlet pipes in Perth, which is quite helpful. The third concern has been about the pipeline being laid across Botany Bay. And we've chosen that route very carefully. We're avoiding seagrasses, and the first 800 metres at the Kurnell end is going to be microtunnels, so we're going under the grasses. And the rest of the route that we're going across has virtually no seagrass on it. As long as we keep our silt down to controllable levels, our impact on Botany Bay should be minimal. Another question that's posed in relation to the plant is how it will operate, and I don't know the answer to that yet, but we've been doing a lot of modelling on it, and what we're assuming is that we will have a rule something like, if the dams are at 70%, we will turn the desal plant off, and if it's below 70%, we will turn it on. And if that's the rule, this is the sort of operations that you can expect. The 28 years that we've chosen here are relatively dry years, but you can see that we'd be running the plant on this with this rainfall data a little over half of the time. But the way that it will run will be, it'll be on for some years and then it'll be off for some years. And that goes back to the pattern of the rainfall in our catchment. If we have a big spill of rain, we'll turn the desal plant off for a few years, and then we're in some years of no rain, we'll keep running it. Now this is very different from other cities who are building desal plants like as a base load. Sydney's problem with water is not a shortage of water all the time, it's a shortage of water frequently. The maths around this are still being worked out, and the Metropolitan Water Plan Group will come to a landing on this, I would think, probably by the end of the year. So we're investing $1.9 billion on the desal plant, and that can provide 15% of the water supply, and per kilolitre it costs about $2.60, including capital costs, that's everything. Operating costs are considerably less than a dollar a kilolitre. One of the questions that we often get asked is why we don't do more recycling, and it's true that reverse osmosis effluent treatment is cheaper than desalination. But what isn't true is the transport costs are much greater. With desalination, the costs of treatment are a little higher and transport is much lower. We have one pump to get a lot of water from Kurnell to Erskineville. If we were treating effluent, for public health reasons, you need to dilute it and you need to take it back behind dams. Even if you go back behind our nearest dam in Warrinora, the transport costs kill you. Sydney's a basin and you're pumping uphill, and it's extremely costly. So large-scale recycled water for potable use in Sydney is certainly not going to work for the foreseeable future. And desal is very cost competitive. Desalination plants are now more energy efficient than they used to be, and they can't compete with gravity-fed water from dams in cost terms, but they are competitive with other options. And Sydney hasn't invested in a major water supply scheme since the Warragamba scheme in the 40s and 50s. And the return on this investment is security, both for business, households and government. We know we won't run out of water now for some decades. And it was interesting in the last price determination we've had that our regulator commented that water is no longer scarce, and therefore they abandoned their declining block tariff and just charged one price for water. It is what it is. And that happens to be $1.93 a kilolitre long-run marginal cost. If we are concerned about climate change, we've now got additional modules that can be added to take the desal capacity up to 30%. So I think all in all, Sydney's managing its water crisis, if that's what it was, quite well. And this is Sydney Water's capital program. The desalination plant is in a special purpose vehicle, and that's the purple mountain at the top, which peaked this year. The blue underneath is the pipeline from Kurnell to Erskineville. The yellow is the replacement flows project at St Mary's, the recycled water plant. And then we get down to our business as usual things, which is catering for growth in growth sectors and other parts of Sydney, and basically replacement and other recurrent expenditure. Sydney Water is a big capital spender. Even if we were in a steady state, we'd be spending probably $600 million a year. Maybe a little bit more, just on growth and replacement matters. But we are in the midst of this very big spend, which, however, is going to bring Sydney a secure water supply. So just to sum up, by 2015, we'll have about 12% of water demand being met by recycled water through various projects. We'll have up to 15% from desal, and we can expand that to 30 if we wish. And around 9% water efficiency programs like WaterFix and the Every Drop Counts business program. So I think we can move into the next decade with great confidence that Sydney has a secure and flexible water supply, and desalination is an indispensable and cost-effective part of that mix. Thank you very much.